Afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 5th of October, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with author P.T. Custard about her new children's book, The Crowded Backyard, prior to Friday's book signing at Hearthside Books downtown. Aaron Magazarian and Jet Hagcock Brenner will be here to talk about their roles in Perseverance Theater's production of The 39 Steps. We'll highlight the first Friday activities in the Center Building with Anne House of Boam, Alana Balmashwan of Figment, and Mark Vinsel of the Juneau Artist Gallery. And we'll also get a preview of tonight's Wildlife Wednesday program featuring Ernestine Hayes. That Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight looks like increasing clouds, scattered rain showers. Forecast for Thursday, rain likely with high temperatures around 49 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Federal officials have arrested four men for allegedly using the Alaska Native-owned company EACTEC as a conduit for their corruption scheme with employees of the Army Corps of Engineers. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, D.C.
Prosecutors allege two employees of the Army Corps of Engineers colluded with Harold Babb of EACTEC and his son to steal around $20 million from the government. EACTEC operates as an Alaska Native corporation under the EAC tribe of Cordova. The men allegedly received the overpayments after padding the invoices they filed with the government. Prosecutors also say the men used the money to bankroll a lavish lifestyle, including first-class air tickets, rental properties, BMWs, and Rolex watches. The four men are charged with wire fraud, bribery, and money laundering. Ronald Machen, U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, called the scheme one of the most brazen federal procurement scandals in our nation's history. The men pleaded not guilty and are being held in the District of Columbia's federal court until a hearing Thursday. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A concept to make dental care more accessible, introduced in this country by Alaska Native tribal health organizations, is gaining national support. The Kellogg Foundation released survey results this week showing 78% of Americans support training mid-level dental providers to offer clinical care and preventative programs. KMBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
The Kellogg Foundation sponsored research to see if people think access to dental care is a problem and to gauge American attitudes toward the idea of using mid-level dental providers. Michael Perry is a partner in the national public opinion firm Lake Research Partners. He says a survey of 1,024 people with the same demographics as the American population showed 41% of households have had problems getting dental care.
That's remarkable. I mean, 4 out of 10 Americans putting off dental care due to cost is just, it's a travesty.
Perry says the high cost of dental care, even with insurance, and a shortage of dentists were barriers to people getting dental health care. Studies show that the Alaska Native population has the highest tooth decay rate of any U.S. group, which prompted tribal health organizations to launch the Dental Health Aid Therapist Program in 2007. In 2009, Minnesota adopted dental therapist legislation. Ohio, New Mexico, Kansas, Washington, and Vermont are working to establish programs, and more than a dozen states are considering similar options. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The first female chief of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians is sworn in. Phyllis Anderson took oath of office Tuesday in Mississippi. Anderson takes the leadership position after election disputes. She unseated incumbent chief Beasley Denson in an election last month. It was the second election for chief. Previous election results were tossed out due to alleged voting irregularities. Anderson urged tribal members for unity during her inaugural speech. Anderson says one of her goals for the tribe is to focus on financial stability. In Canada, First Nations leaders from Quebec and Ottawa are planning to rally for education needs. Chiefs and other First Nations people are holding the event Thursday in Ottawa at the Human Rights Monument. The purpose is to voice concerns of the funding crisis facing First Nations education and to draw awareness to a national panel established by the federal government. The panel is to examine First Nation education. According to a press release, this is the third year that First Nations have protested the federal government's attempts to address First Nations education. Educators say students are being deprived of education opportunities. First Nations would like full control and financial support for their educational needs. During this week in 1986, Congress designated the Nez Perce National Historical Trail. It stretches from Oregon to Montana and covers the path the Nez Perce took in their flight from the Army in 1877. Nez Perce people covered more than 1,000 miles on the trip that lasted from June to October. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. And our first guest is P.T. Custard. We call her Trish around the station. She's come out with a new book called The Crowded Backyard. Trish, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
So this is a new book, your fourth book. It's got some illustrations by a guy named Jeffrey Duckworth, and you're having a book signing at Hearthside Downtown on Friday at 4:30 until 7 o'clock.
That's correct. I'm having, actually, it's a big book launch party. This is the first time I've actually gotten to do a party for one of my books, so we're going to do it upright. We're going to invite everybody to come on down and have some cookies, and we've got coloring sheets and stickers for the kids, and Dill, the main character of this book, is going to make a special guest appearance, and we're also going to have a special guest appearance by the preeminent balloon artist in Juneau. You might know him, Jeff Brown.
No, he's full of hot air.
Well, I didn't want to say that, but so it's going to be a lot of fun as part of the First Friday events.
This is happening this Friday at 4:30 until 7 at the downtown version of Hearthside Books. So this is your fourth book. How do you decide you want to be a children's author?
Well, for many years I worked as a education specialist in museums and such as that, and I did curriculum-based writing for children, activity books, and people kept telling me, you really need to put something out there for the general public. Try writing a children's book. So I finally took them up on it, and it's been no looking back since.
And you're self-published?
Yes, I started my own publishing company.
It must have been scary.
It was very scary. It's one of those things that it's good that you don't know. Ignorance is bliss, because we just went into it. I had two friends who had talents that I knew that I would need. One was an illustrator and the other was a book designer. And we just blithely went about putting together a book. Happened to get a very good printer who was very patient and was able to help guide us through the process. And lo and behold, we did a book.
In The Crowded Backyard, your fourth book, is inspired by a real dog named Dill. You want to go over the plot, please? It doesn't take that much.
I don't want to give too much away now, but Dill is a dog who discovers one day that his yard has become very crowded and he does not like it. And through a series of events, he learns that his yard really isn't crowded. It's just full. It's full of activity. It's full of life. It's full of fun. And the moral of the story is your happiness depends on how you view things.
And this is inspired by a real dog named Dill?
That's correct. When we were living in Virginia, I unintentionally developed this massive wildlife habitat in our backyard just by putting out a few bird feeders. And all kinds of critters came into the yard, raccoons, possums, squirrels. And Dill didn't like it. And just by watching him and seeing what he was doing, I got this idea for the book.
What appeals to you about writing for a younger audience? And I guess I should say, what age group is this for?
I say pre-readers up through about third grade. The older kids can get some of the gentle humor in the book. The younger children like the bright and colorful pictures that I use in it. And I guess I like doing it because it's a challenge. It's a challenge to write a complete story in 600 words or less. It's a challenge to meld words with pictures and to do so in a way that children are going to like and appreciate and want to go back to.
What's the process of writing a book?
Well, teachers always ask me this question, and they always get very angry at me when I say it just springs forth. But really, basically, that's what happens for me. I have struggled and struggled to try to write books. I'll come up with an idea that I think is going to make a great book, and it doesn't really come through. And then I'll come up with an idea, and it just all gels together. It writes itself just about within a day or two.
How many stories have you write before you think you have a keeper?
Well, I go through probably about a dozen ideas before one really, really hits.
And how do you work with an illustrator?
This is the first time I've worked with an illustrator who was not a friend. First two books I did with a friend of mine, and one book I illustrated myself. And this gentleman, Jeff Duckworth, I don't know him. I've never met him. I've only corresponded with him through email, and it's been the most wonderful process. I sent him the book, asked him if he would be interested, the text of the book, asked him if he'd be interested in illustrating it, and if so, how much he would charge me. And we went back and forth from there, and it was a true collaborative process. He started out with giving me an idea of what he thought the character was going to look like, and then he did little thumbnail sketches, storyboarded it, and it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until we got to where we are today with the finished book.
Do you ever change your words based on the needs of the illustrator?
Never.
Whoa, tough fine words there.
I shouldn't say never. Once it happened, but it was minor. We didn't notice it until the very end. It was the very first book, and we were noticing as we were just about to go to print that there was a picture of the dog standing when I had referred to him as sitting. He was sitting and doing something, and the picture had him standing and doing something. So we had to change one little word in there. But otherwise, it's really the illustrator's job to develop the pictures around the story that I give them. And I think as I'm writing the book, I'm visualizing the pictures in my head. So I have to write things so that they can be illustrated, so that they're full, complete ideas and sentences from page to page to page.
They're very fun illustrations, bright, crisp, and clean, and certainly will appeal to young kids.
I hope so, and that's what we were looking for. I told Jeff I wanted the character to be cute, but with an attitude. So I think all the little characters in this book kind of have attitude. The squirrels are kind of zippy, and the dog is a little bit feisty.
What kind of comments do you get from kids?
Kids love them. It's been very interesting with my four titles. This one is just now being released, so I haven't gotten a lot of feedback back from it. My other books, Dill has been in another one of my books, and they really enjoy the character of Dill because he's a comical character. He gets angry, he gets upset, but then he works his way through his issues, and they just think he's funny, and they like it. They like the pictures, they like the stories, and they get the lesson that I'm trying to give for them.
I've been talking to P.T. Custard with a voice known here at the station as Trish, who is a Monday morning cross currents, with Katie Chapman about her book, The Crowded Backyard, the illustrations by Jeffrey Duckworth. There's a book signing this Friday at 4:30 until 7 p.m. at Hearthside Books downtown. And anything you want to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, I just really would like to invite everybody to come on out. It's first Friday of October event. She'll be downtown anyway. Stop on by. We're going to have wonderful cookies and balloons and a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
I'm like my dog. She's got an interesting pedigree. She likes to eat, and she's got big feet. Like I said, I'm like my dog, and she's like me. Well, I found this hound at the local pound, and she took just one look at me, and she said, I'll lick your face if you get me out of this place. Come, I am longing to be free, and I'm like my dog, and I like my dog. She's got an interesting pedigree, just like me. She likes to eat, and she's got big feet. Like I said, I'm like my dog, and she's like me. She's soft and sweet. She likes to walk down the street and treat everyone like a friend. Her teeth are white, but she doesn't fight. Well, maybe every now and then. And like I said, I'm like my dog. And I like my dog. She's got an interesting pedigree. She likes to eat. She's got big feet. Like I said, I'm like my dog. And she's like me.
Jane Rudenberg. Time is 3:15 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Aaron Magazarian and Jed Hancock-Brainerd from the Perseverance Theater production of The 39 Steps to talk a little bit about the play. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
How are you?
What a day. And you, as actors, do you look up, like, what time do you go to sleep at night?
We historically keep pretty late hours, so yeah, I don't know, I think we go to bed at two.
Yeah, two is...
Yeah.
So you're just waking up today.
Yeah. Yeah, we keep late hours. We love the daylight, but I don't know. We've been, even in school, we stayed up late too, always.
Yeah, it's hard, especially doing such a crazy physical show like 39 Steps, where you have to have your energy up at peak levels at that late hour at night, then to shut it off is kind of a tricky thing. And also that, you know, you want to be prepared to be geared up at that time of night, too.
I heard it's a physically demanding show.
It is, very. It doesn't really stop from the get-go. And so, you know, through the rehearsal process, we've all gotten quite fit, I have to say. And we're maintaining that fitness every night. There's a lot of sweat on that stage. So if you like sweat... you'll get it.
And this production is based on Alfred Hitchcock's movie, The 39 Steps. How much like the movie does it resemble it?
Well, it's amazing. I just watched the movie recently. Rebecca, who's also in the cast, her family was in town, and we watched The 39 Steps, the movie. It was amazing to watch again after, you know, really having the lines under my belt and other people's lines under my belt even from just doing the show and seeing how much the show is very identical to the movie, I would say.
It is. It follows, and it has a different approach, a different attitude about it. It's, you know, although there's humor in, there are humorous moments or elements, perhaps, in The 39 Steps in Hitchcock's, and ours is a much more playful rendering of that. Yeah. Still, the lines, there are many lines are the same. The situations are the same. It surprised me how close it was once I'd seen the film.
But the humorous elements are definitely exploded and exploited, I'd say, in the play.
Yeah, for sure.
To a large extent, from what I understand.
Oh, yes.
The plot of The 39 Steps, I guess, I'm not sure if I should ask about the movie or the play. But let's ask about the play.
Well, in the play is centered on Richard Hannay, who I play. And he's just returned to London after being abroad for a while. And he's not particularly happy about his situation. He's a man about town, and he at the theater he meets a woman, a mysterious woman who ultimately sets him off on a huge adventure, in essence, to save England / the world / himself, his own life, by means of this adventure. He was sort of bored, and now suddenly his life has been injected with this crazy situation that he has to deal with.
Everyone, I understand part of the humor develops around the number of characters that have to be acting in any one person's body at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. There are scenes where, within the course of a minute, Roblin, Gray Davis, and myself, we change characters, you know, six or seven times in the course of a minute. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, there are quite a few characters, and Rebecca Noon plays multiple characters as well. I'm the only person that that remains as the protagonist, and I don't change characters. I just change throughout the play as things happen to me. So
you're the fixed point.
I'm the fixed point in the play. Yes, you follow me. And they didn't trust me to change characters anyway. So,
so Jed, how do you keep the roles separate in your mind and also in the audience's minds?
Mostly it has a lot to do with the hats that I'm wearing at any one point. There's a lot of hat changing and costume changing, and so I now have a visual lock on who those people are. So when I'm running around backstage, I find, you know, this tie and this jacket, and I go, right, that's the salesman. And then I have the physical and vocal stuff, you know, I have it connected to those things. So I remember sort of in the moment as it's happening.
They can all switch gears very quickly. Yeah. You learn to do that. Pop from one person to the next.
For sure.
So you said vocals. You know, it's interesting that I noted with a dialect coach in the program notes.
That's right, yeah. Christina Apathy really helped put us through our paces and got us to a point where that's also a big part in distinguishing the characters. I mean, there are moments where like, Roblin and I are switching hats, but very little else, and so that's really what helps set also characters apart from each other. In addition to the physical characterization, the actual dialect is so important.
Could you talk about some of the other people involved in the theater the audience never sees?
Sure, yeah. Well, we have three lovely stage hands that work on this show that really make it possible.
That's right. We have Jason, Evan, Jessica.
Yep. And then, of course, our stage manager, Nikki.
Yeah, Nikki Dawson. It's been amazing. Who else do we have? Well, when the show is actually running, that's who's there.
That's the crew.
That's who's actually there in the moment. So there are others who are involved in the production, but when you come to a night now that's in the run, those are the people that are in motion and flying around, busy the whole time.
But then also recently, we use a lot of props in this show, and our props person is Kathleen Harper. And things break all the time because the show, things move so fast and happen so quickly that sometimes things do break. Like, we had a chair break on us, and so Kathleen had to come into the theater and repair the chair for us and get it ready for the next show.
Yeah, and clothing rips, and Val, who's the head of the costume for this show, things are flying off and shredding and disintegrating, and... So it's a live show, and all kinds of things happen from one night to the next.
And the actors are involved in a group called the Stranger Tractor Theater Company. You want to tell me about them, please?
Yeah, Stranger Tractor is myself, Jed, Roblin Davis, and Rebecca Noon. And the four of us have been creating work from scratch, I guess, for the last year and a half. Is that right, Jed?
Last
year and a half as a foursome. We all trained together in London in a particular approach for devising your own work. And so we've, the four of us, united after, we decided after Eurydice, I guess, when we were here in Juneau to do Eurydice, we made a show called, on the Phoenix stage, called Forward Operating Base. And we thought that the chemistry was great, and we decided that we would make more work together, and Stranger Tractor was born from that.
I'm talking with Aaron Magazarian and Jed Hancock-Brainerd about the play The 39 Steps, playing now at Perseverance Theater. And I understand it's been getting good houses for the past few weeks, as few performances.
It has. Yeah, we've been very happy about the houses. People have been very positive. you can feel the audiences, they seem to be having a good time, and that affects us. It's a group, it's a complicité between everybody who's in the room, in the audience, and us. And the Juno houses have been fantastic.
They've been awesome.
They have. Yeah, we're so pleased about that.
What about the differences in the audiences and how they react differently to different lines in the play? Sometimes if you're delivering a line that you know gets an act with an audience and sometimes doesn't get the same response.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, night to night, the show, I mean, being a live experience definitely changes quite a bit. And some nights, yeah, you'll get a house that, you know, they'll maybe be quieter than the night before and they won't be laughing as much maybe. And you think, man, are they really liking this show? Like, are they really mm-hmm. enjoying it? But then at the end, I mean, pretty consistently people have enjoyed it and still hung around and wanted to talk to us and really enthusiastic. So you can't always tell if what's happening. They could just be very attentive and wanting to listen.
Quiet. Yeah, if they're quiet, sometimes your first response is like, oh no, we're really bombing this.
Yeah, thing. Exactly.
You know, we've gone off the cliff. But that's not necessarily true. And different moments receive different responses. It can be us because we're not robots. We do things differently, and we're responding to each other and what's happening in the space. But so you keep the fight going in a way. You don't know really what's going on, but so when they're quiet, it doesn't mean you give up, and it doesn't mean they're not interested. But they haven't been that quiet in this run.
And the 39 Steps runs at Perseverance Theater. If you need more information about the play, you can check on perseverancetheater.org or go to 463 or call 463-TIX-S, I believe. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
It's awesome to be in Juneau again. And the play has been extended, happily. So the play is going now until the 23rd, right?
Think so.
The
23rd, Sunday.
Yeah. So there's another weekend. So it's an additional Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So that's because of the great audiences we've had.
All right, Aaron and Jed, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks
so much. Good to see you, Jeff.
Sing. Singly none.
John McCutcheon from a CD called Step by Step. Time is 3:29 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the first Friday celebrations at the Senate building. I've got Diane Anderson and Alana Balam-Schwan and Mark Vinsel. Diane and Mark are with Juneau Artist Gallery, and Alana is the manager of the Figment Store, which is a fairly new gallery in town. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Mark, you want to give us an overview of what's happening on Friday?
Oh, sure. We always have First Friday, every first Friday of the month, but this is a special day for the Senate Building ground floor shops, and we'll have a Locals Appreciation Day, both for First Friday on October 7th and the next Saturday, which is October 8th. Both days will open at 11 a.m., but three shops, Juneau Artist Gallery and Boheme and the Bears Lair, are all having a 15% off everything in the store for those 2 days. We'll also have some entertainment that Alana can speak to, and we'll have sort of the standard fare for First Fridays with cheese and crackers and hors d'oeuvres and little light soft drinks. But we look forward to having locals be able to come back downtown. You don't have to worry about parking spaces. There should be plenty of room and plenty of room to browse around. And all of our artists and all of our shops are all still open year-round. We're not just here for the tourist season.
Alana, you want to talk about the entertainment, please?
Yeah, the Senate Building has DJ Manu, who's going to be playing music from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. And then in Figment, starting at 7 p.m., we have Mallory Story, who's going to be playing live music with some friends.
Tell me about Figment, please, if you could.
Yeah. This month we have two new art collections, one by Christian May Carrillo and one by myself, as well as we're going to be featuring new pottery by Khaki Shields.
Dan, you want to talk about some of the artists? I know it's probably impossible to list all the artists involved in the Juneau Artist Gallery.
Well, first of all, I wanted to welcome Alana to our building. We're pleased
Thank
to
you.
Have her in that little corner where it was been real quiet for a while. We have some new artists. Charles Rohrbacher is joining us, so he will have his icons there and beautiful hanging on the wall. And we've got all new work from each individual artist bringing in. There's new work from the Kilns of Joyce and Basement Studios. And I managed to squeeze in a few new pieces yesterday. So we're all just anxious to see old friends coming in to say hi.
But how many artists are there in the Juneau Artist Gallery?
We just counted them up because we knew that would be one of your questions, and we have 24. Some artists are a husband and wife teams, which means a little bit more people, and we have one that has glass beads and photography, but basically 24 people.
And it's run like a co-op?
Yes. Juneau Artist Gallery co-op.
And it requires people to sit in there and be open to the business?
Right. We run the business. We come in and work. We have board that runs it, makes business decisions. So we run our own thing.
This First Friday is going on and celebrates how many businesses?
There's three upstairs.
There are other businesses upstairs, but we're not sure how much they're participating. But it's the four businesses on the ground floor.
You want to tell me about Boheme, please?
Oh, Boheme is a dress shop. Ann House is the owner, and many of us know her through her activism in town. But it's a dress shop with a variety of styles. Ann couldn't make it today. She's down there at the shop covering right now. But she did also mention the 15% discount on the 2 days.
And she has great styles for all ages. She's pretty versatile.
Mark, you want to tell me a little bit about your art, please?
Oh, yes, I'm a watercolor painter. I paint mostly outdoors in the places that I tend to go on my recreation, which is mostly recreational fly fishing. But I've been painting for about 40 years now through a wide range of western United States and now the last 10 years here in Alaska in Juneau.
Alana, how about your art?
I would say that I'm an illustrator, This collection, called Family Tree, is a series of portraits with maybe not your typical subject matter as the characters. So you have to come see and see what I'm talking about.
Diane, you want to talk about your art, please?
Well, I think I draw mostly on inspiration from Alaska. And I have a variety of media now, from oil painting that I started out studying, added to silk paintings or scarves with different floral designs and northern lights. And then my etchings are still in there, and those have been are medals that are etched and pressed to handmade paper. And the paper is made out of blue jeans and fireweed and beets and a variety of things that I pick up and throw in the pot.
And you just changed your hours from the summer hours to the winter hours, from what I understand.
Yes, we're 11 to 6 now, mm-hmm. and we're closed Sundays and Mondays.
But Friday we will be staying open till 8 p.m.
Yeah.
All right, I've been talking to Diane Anderson, Mark Denzel, and also Alana Balam-Schwan about the Senate Building's First Friday activities. If people need more information about any of these or businesses, should they just call them directly? Is there one number they can call for every answer that they're looking for?
Well, Juno Artist Gallery phone number is 586-9891, and we're on the web at www.junoartistsgallery.com.
Figment's phone number is 523-8882, and we are on Facebook.
All right, anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
Come on down, Jeff.
All right, thank you for inviting me.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 5th of October, 2011. It's the birthday of Clive Barker, born Liverpool, England, 1952, author of macabre stories, also poetry, essays, plays, children's literature, painter, filmmaker as well. Grew up in a working-class home. His parents scrimped and saved to pay for a good education. But when he was accepted into London's Royal College of Art, they asked him not to go. They said, please, this is the last thing we'll ever ask of you. We've supported you going to these schools, and it's been expensive. Please don't disappoint us now by wasting it all by becoming a painter. It's the birthday of the astronomer Neil deGrasse Tyson, 1958, New York City. He was interested in outer space from a young age. But growing up in the Bronx, African-American, where boys earned respect for sports, it wasn't easy. But he still studied astronomy on his own, went on to write 8 books of astrophysics, hosted Nova Science Now on PBS, and became director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York. It was he who spearheaded the movement to have Pluto downgraded from full planet to dwarf planet status. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who wrote, I don't care what else anyone has ever told you, the sun is white, not yellow. Human color perception is a complicated business, but if the sun were yellow, like a yellow light bulb, then white stuff, such as snow, would reflect this light and appear yellow. A snow condition confirmed to happen only near fire hydrants. It's the birthday of Edward P. Jones, 1951, Washington, D.C. He was brought up by his mother, who was a dishwasher, completely illiterate. The boy was a bookish kid, studied creative writing in graduate school at the University of Virginia, then became a proofreader for a tax publication called Tax Notes. And in 1991, published his first book, a collection of short stories, Lost in the City. Got an idea for a novel long after that, started thinking about it, working it out in his head for 10 years. The Known World was the title of it, and it won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2003. The first televised presidential address on this date, 1947, President Harry Truman speaking from the White House on the subject of food conservation. Europe faced a winter famine, and so the president called on the American public to do their part by observing meatless Tuesdays, going without poultry and eggs on Thursdays, eating less bread. And it was on this date, 1877, Chief Joseph surrendered to the United States Cavalry. He and his band of Nez Perce Indians had been fleeing through Oregon, Washington, Idaho, into Montana, where they were finally trapped only 40 miles from the Canadian border. And Chief Joseph made his famous surrender address, in which he said, "Hear me, my chiefs, I am tired, my heart is sick and sad. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever." Here's a poem for today by David Budbill, "Our Lives Pass Away." Summer sunlight glitters on the water. Sweet colors of fall drift down and land on my new woodpile. Winter is full of snow and cold, but inside the wood stove glows. Then spring again. Our lives pass away. A poem by David Budbill, "Our Lives Pass Away," from his collection Happy Life, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Folkloric Dance of Egypt is the focus of the next Evening at Egan at the University of Alaska Southeast. Sara Saida, Director of Journey Through Egypt Dance Workshops, presents an overview of traditional dance styles of Egypt, along with a demonstration by members of Daughters of the New Moon Dance Troupe, Friday, October 7th, 7 p.m. at the Egan Lecture Hall on the UAS Auk Lake campus. All Evening at Egan lectures are simulcast on UATV and live via streaming video.
Time is 3:41, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest, you're here to talk about something that's happening at the University of Alaska Southeast, but not on Friday. It's happening tonight, Wildlife Wednesday. In the studio with me are Ernestine Hayes, who's a writer and a teacher at the University of Alaska Southeast, and also Tina Brown, who's involved with the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. Thank you, everybody, for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Jeff.
Tina, you want to tell us about the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, please?
You bet, Jeff. We were founded in 1978, and the Alliance is a nonprofit organization committed to the preservation and protection of Alaska's wildlife. We're grassroots. All of us are Alaskans.
And you have a series of Wildlife Wednesday presentations that started a couple Wednesdays ago?
Yeah, this is actually our second one. We do this every month, and last month we had speakers telling us about the flood from the ice dam that burst, and now we're shifting gears, and we're going to hear from Ernestine Hayes, and she'll be reading from her new and recent work. We're very excited.
Ernestine, thank you for coming down the station today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When did you decide you wanted to become a writer?
I've written all my life, but I didn't entertain the thought of becoming a writer until I belatedly started my education at UAS in the late 90s. Then, in study, I realized I might be a writer.
You teach people how to write?
Yes.
Is that difficult or is that kind of easy?
Well, in a way, it's difficult, but I don't teach it as an art. I teach it as a craft, and I feel like it's, for instance, it's similar to sculpture, where if somebody wants to learn how to sculpt, you give them a hammer and chisel and teach them how to hold that and what to do, and the same thing with writing as a craft. I give them the tools, and then they apply it to their own genius.
What's the hardest thing for them to get through their heads the first time?
Well, sometimes it seems like those passive voice linking verbs. More descriptive verbs, action verbs, maybe. It certainly was the most difficult thing for me to try to master, and I don't think anything's changed.
How do you choose a subject when you're writing for yourself?
Sometimes I write in response to a call for papers or call for submission. Sometimes I write in response to something I've scribbled down in my calendar, a thought that occurred to me, and I revisit it and realize that it's the kernel of an essay or a story.
Now, being a teacher, you must give your students homework. Do you ever give yourself homework lessons?
Sometimes I give myself writing homework. That seems like the only way to really get writing done. I got more writing done when I was a student than since.
What's your favorite way to write? Is it late at night, early in the morning, after a cup of coffee or a cup of tea?
Early in the morning with a cup of coffee, like 5 a.m.
How long of a stretch do you write for?
Usually, if I try not to time myself, but I try to give myself a number of pages or a number of words that I want to write in one session.
You seem to is it your book Memoirs of a Blonde Indian? How did you come up with that?
The title?
Just the decision to write about it.
Blonde Indian was actually a combination of a lot of pieces of writing that I'd done that I realized actually had a thread, had a strand that carried through a lot of the writings, and that's when I realized those small writings were actually part of a longer piece.
Do you write because you have to write?
Yes, I write because I have to write, and I write because I love to read my own words.
You know, tonight at 7 o'clock, you'll be talking about your recent works?
Yes.
You want to give us a sample now, what you could be reading tonight?
Sure. I'm going to read from an essay, and read an essay that was published in Studies in American Indian Literature called Winter in Thlinkit Oni Brings Magpies and Ravens. And I did this in response to a call for submissions. So that's a good point there. I'll just read a couple paragraphs. My grandmother's name was Sao Du'u, Ruth Willard Hayes. She chopped wood for the cook stove and washed clothes with a scrub board. She rolled a scarf around her head, picked up a knife, and went to work sliming fish. After putting me to sleep, she bathed herself, and the next day she powdered her face while I watched. She drew eyebrows atop brilliant, knowing eyes and reminded me from my first day, get ready. Be prepared. Don't let anything surprise you. You must be willing to face every threat. For the first few years of my life, I lived with Sao Du'u while my mother was in the hospital for tuberculosis. During those years, my grandmother taught me how to see the world. She taught me to listen to the spiders in our house, for they knew the things that I needed to know.
Ms. Jean Hayes reading from one of her recent book works, which is she could be reading tonight at 7 o'clock at the U.S. Egan Library. Do you want to give us the details exactly?
Actually, it'll be the Glacier View Room, which is just down the hall from the library. It's Egan 221-222. It's right above the lecture hall, 7 o'clock this evening. I am really looking forward to this. That was awesome. I want to hear more from that piece in particular. We do have refreshments also for free, homemade treats, and Heritage Coffee generously donates coffee and condiments. And I believe that Ernestine is going to be signing books, and UAS Bookstore will be selling them. So it's a great opportunity for everyone.
Ernestine, how much editing do you do for your work?
I'm editing things that have already been published. I don't stop. I'm never really satisfied. Another book that I'll be reading from tonight, or really will be looking at, is a study guide for the English version of Town Bear, Forest Bear, because it gives a lesson about stories and how they are meant to teach and to compose our world, and not just for entertainment.
Cool. That's all happening at 7 o'clock at the Glacier View Room at the Egan Library Building. and it's free. It's put on by the people from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. If people need more information about Wildlife Wednesdays or the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, how can they find some information, Tina?
More information on AWA? We're a statewide group. We also have an active Southeast chapter, and we work to preserve the integrity, beauty, and stability of Alaska's ecosystems. We support true subsistence hunting. We recognize the intrinsic value of Alaska's ecosystems, as I said, and the value of wildlife. So we work to achieve and maintain balanced ecosystems in our state. I might add that if you want more information about tonight, or if you're confused about where the talk will be, or anything like that, you can call me at 523-5402, and information is also on the Alaska Wildlife Alliance website, www.akwildlife.org.
And Tina and Ernestine, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I just thank you for the pleasure of being here again, Jeff. It's good to see you.
And thanks, Jeff.
Music of Tavaka. They're going to be appearing in concert at the Dinner Douglas High School Auditorium, and a concert brought to you by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council on Sunday, October 16th. If you need more information about that, check out the Arts Council website at www.jahc.org.
Hey, Juno, KRNN is starting a new live concert series at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater with Colette Costa.
Well, thanks, Scott. It's going to be Wednesday, October 5th at 7 p.m., and you're going to be my co-host for the Windy Ridge Roundup. What is that anyway?
Well, it'll be a night of country-inspired tunes from such Juno luminaries as Andy Ferguson,
Stuart Ely,
Eric Chadwell,
Pat Henry,
Colette Costa,
and Scott Burton,
and more. Go to KRNN.org for more info and tickets.
That's October 5th at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town Theater.
And you are tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sursuna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9, and in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. In the background, the music of David Grisman and Sam Bush. Coming up tomorrow in a Juneau afternoon, we'll find out about Saturday's Great Pumpkin Festival State Fair with our guest Brenda Krause. Hua Maunu will update us on this month's Artist Open Space series. We'll also get our appetites ready for this Sunday's pasta dinner fundraiser at the Clinkett and Haida Center for Breast Cancer Research. Marcy Larson and Damian Horvath will be from the Alaska here from the Alaska Brewing Company to let us know what it takes to win award-winning beers. And Anthony Trini will be here with news and views about local activities during Arts Up. It's tomorrow at 3 here on KTOO News. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, low temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, more rain with high temperatures around 48 degrees. Friday looks like rain with high temperatures around 49 degrees. coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you very much for tuning into Juno Afternoon today, and have a pleasant evening.
Disability Awareness Month, and that means it's time for SAIL's annual gala event. This year's dinner and auction will be held at Centennial Hall Friday, October 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. Come help us celebrate and raise funds to inspire personal independence in Juneau by eating a delicious catered dinner, bid on fantastic auction items, and be at the premiere of SAIL's new short film. Tickets are $40 and are available at the SAIL office or online at sailinc.org. 586-4920. See you there!